listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Daily Gold Podcast. I think we've only done one interview recently, but we have one of my favorite guests for you here today. He's Greg Weldon, the CEO of Weldon Financial. You can find his work at WeldonOnline.com. And Greg, the reason I wanted to have you come on today is because it seems that gold could be at an interesting juncture here in the short term, at least technically. It's failed to break out recently, and then it kind of seems like there's a couple camps developing. You have some people who think that gold maybe could crack in the months ahead and maybe have some kind of a washout. And then you have the other camp where people who think everything is still fine and gold's on track to break out later in the year. So I want to talk about both the technicals and the fundamentals with you. Where do you want to start exactly?
Wherever you want to go. I mean, I think the technicals are kind of the more near-term concern to the bulls and potentially opportunistic for the bears. I would say that I don't see a huge long speculative position here, you know, in which to think you're going to create a very sharp, steep, quick decline on the back of, you know, long liquidation. I think, you know, if you kind of crack here, it might be new shorts that come into play. But I think the dollar move is corrective in nature. And the dollar, frankly, the dollar is above the 200-day moving average, and gold is not below the 200-day moving average. I think there's some thought process to be discussed here about the gold diverging from its normal correlation with the dollar. And that would be a bigger picture story that would play out through the rest of the year, frankly. And it's something we've been looking at just for the last few weeks. But having said all that, the risk to gold right now is technical, because you do have kind of support levels that you're testing here. The dollar's into a corrective mode. I think the dollar has 94.50 minimum, probably higher. 96 would be a real key target on a corrective basis to see the dollar rally. And I think it fails if it gets up there. Then the question is, where is gold if that happens? The question then becomes, you know, gold take out, you know, lower lows than kind of what we've already seen. And, you know, I mean, in terms of kind of the bigger picture, you know, can gold get all the way back down to the 2000, you know, to the 1120 area, for crying out loud? I just don't see a scenario where you have the momentum to drive gold that low. So I view gold as being technically vulnerable, yes, but in the sense of, you know, anything down in the 1260 to 1240 range to me offers good long-term value. So I think fundamentally it's patience and still an evolving bullish picture, whereas technically it's some impatience and some downside risk in the near term.
Okay, very well said. Just a quick technical follow-up. Is in the mid-1200s, is that the level that gold really needs to hold? In other words, if gold, I mean, is there a level that if gold doesn't hold where it could lose, you know, $30 or $50 quickly?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see it take out those lows set late last year at 1236.50 basis the front month futures contract. So that was kind of spike low below the 200-day moving average, and you got down into that zone, below the – let me just double-check. I'm going to pull this up as we speak because I think it's important. I think it's the two-year moving average. I'm looking at the weekly chart. Yeah, exactly, the two-year moving average, which is one that I watch very closely with the 52-week. So, yeah, I mean, back in, you know, late 2017, I guess it was towards the end of the year, December maybe, where you had that low at 1236.50 set below the two-year moving average and then reversed right back up above it. So if that low were to be taken out, then you will be below the two-year moving average, below the most recent low, below the uptrend line, going all the way back to the secular low in the fourth quarter of 2015. And that might be a little more technical damage than the market could handle, you know, even in the medium term. But that would have to come in the context of a dollar that's stronger than I think it's going to be. So, you know, if the dollar's above 9,600, then maybe 1240 is at risk.
Okay, I want to ask you about the stock market with respect to gold. But before we get to that, first, let's talk about the dollar. One thing that concerns me, I think the greatest point, if you're a gold bear, I think the greatest point you can make is the dollar in the last 8 or 9 months has made two new lows, and gold could not break out. It cannot make a new high to its 2016 high. And then in the same vein, you've had the stock market go down by about 10%. And so neither neither the stock market or a weak dollar failed to, for gold to break out. I mean, I think that if you're a bear, I think that's the greatest point. But I mean, maybe you think it's just a question of timing and gold's not ready yet.
Well, you know, it's certainly noticeable that you did make new lows in the dollar and did not make new highs in gold. I think that, you know, you got to keep in mind, too, that really what's driving the dollar has kind of shifted. OK, so the thing that drove the dollar down was really kind of started last October and into November, when you started to get the hardcore numbers on the budget deficit that showed the deficit widening to levels that prior to 2009 would have been a record deficits. All right. So within that vein, you kind of, you know, turn your attention to the Fed and the Fed raising rates and, you know, affecting the budget deficit negatively. All right. But what the Fed in that period did also was pretty much eliminate like negative real rates. So I think that might be one thing that kind of held the dollar back is, you know, the fear that the Fed might go too far and start to push real rates into positive territory. And that is, you know, something you might have thought would support the dollar. Interest rate differentials were moving in favor of the dollar, particularly in the long end of the bond market, particularly versus Germany. But that didn't support the dollar all of a sudden. It's been a driving force, dot plot, then bond yield differentials, and all of a sudden, budget deficit. Now, because really of what Mario Draghi said last week, to me this was a critical thing to note, he was very dovish. And while that may be just rhetoric to kind of lay the groundwork going forward to kind of even the field in terms of expectations, which had been they will end QE at the end of September and they will hike rates twice next year, those expectations have been scaled back. And then Draghi dropped a bomb when he basically said, you know, if the euro were to rally more, that would be seen as a tightening of financial conditions, and that's something we might react to with QE. So that was really interesting. And so to me, I think when you saw what happened with European bond yields dropping, at the same time you're getting inflationary whiffs in the U.S. driving bond yields to new highs, all of a sudden the interest rate differentials came back into play because European bonds yields were dropping, rather than not going up as fast as the U.S. Because while that was happening, everyone's expecting that's going to translate into, you know, an adjustment in Germany to inflation, to neutral policy by the ECB, which frankly in Germany wouldn't lift you to the level of inflation because you have all these other countries and it would be too tight, okay, versus the U.S. where that's not too tight. But the thought process that German, you know, two-year Bund yield, two-year Schatz yield rather, which is minus 60 basis points, against a 1.6 inflation that's going to go up, against a 2.9 GDP level, that's insane from a monetary policy perspective. So maybe neutral, where in the U.S. it's the rate of inflation, which is why the two-year note has gone above 2.25, because inflation's above 2.25, versus in Germany, where maybe neutral is, you know, positive nominal rate and a still deeply negative real rate. What all this means is a decline in German and European bond yields from here seems completely unrealistic to me, given what is going on, you know, in the economies there and given what's going on in inflation everywhere and in Europe. So that's to me why the dollar's rally is short-lived, and that's to me why gold ultimately has a play to the upside. And, you know, I think that's important to note in terms of the dollar, because you will once – if you get European bond yields to start to rise, you're going to lose the leg that the dollar correction is built on. And the renewal of the story will be the secular budget deficit dynamic, which is serious and significant and really bearish for the dollar in the longer term.
Now over the, like, let's say next month or two, are you more bullish on gold denominated in the other currencies? Because as we were talking here, and as you mentioned at the beginning, gold has held up really well. I mean, the dollar's already popped a little bit in the short term, and gold hasn't, I mean, it's held above 1300 in the 200 days so far.
I mean, you know, no, I mean, I'm not bullish on gold necessarily in any currency. I mean, I have a core gold position in dollars, which I will hold. I'm not going to get flipped out of that on an upside correction in a dollar that could be unwound in a day or two. So the answer to your question is no. But I think you bring up an interesting point, because, and we've talked about this before, and I've talked about this with my clients, you know, over the last few weeks, watching for signs that gold is diverging from the dollar and kind of going on its own way to getting back to where it is the most bullishly positioned, when it is appreciating against all paper currencies. So let's talk very quickly, and I'll bring this in as a kind of a curveball. trying to steal home here, okay, from third base. You know, are we watching what's going on in Argentina? I mean, you know, the currency is getting wasted. The central bank has raised the official short-term interest rate to 40%, all right, to try and rein inflation down to their target. And in the same vein, they're going to be borrowing less money. It's a really interesting situation. But let's not forget emerging market risk as it applies to this. The U.S. stock market's on – I say repeatedly, I did a big special on this yesterday on the U.S. stock market, and your listeners are free to shoot me an email or hit up our website and get a copy of it on the U.S. stock market. And we called it Mr. Bill. If you remember, I'm old enough to remember the old Saturday Night Live skits from the 70s. Mr. Bill is a clay figure, and Mr. Hand was the one that was always messing with Mr. Bill. And from this perspective, Mr. Bill being the U.S. stock market is about ready. Mr. Hand's going to come down and squash him. The stock market in the U.S. is clinging by a fingernail to a technical precipice. It's extended on a long-term basis more than anything I've ever seen still. And you have the 200-day moving average, the uptrend line, the multi-year uptrend line right here, right at these lows this week. And earnings were supposed to bail you out. And guess what? Earnings were good. But you're right at almost the new lows. You're not at new highs here based on earnings. So that's gone. So I don't see where the stock market has any positive momentum from here. It's kind of only, you know, maybe growth disappointment too, and how that might play in as it relates to emerging markets. And then you talk about what currencies do you want to be long gold in. You know, then it becomes a more pertinent question. And maybe that's ultimately where it goes, where gold dissociates with the dollar because you have some kind of accident taking place in emerging markets. I mean, Chinese stock markets, you know, on the verge of a major technical breakdown itself too. So I would just throw that in there as kind of the wild card of the day is let's not lose focus on emerging markets here because the EEM, which is the emerging market ETF, I mean, it's on the verge of its own major long-term breakdown. And stocks, you know, Petrobras and the Argentinian Merval and, you know, the peso, they've all broken down already.
Okay, let's talk about the gold to the stock market ratio because I know you watch that. I mean, gold has made a lot of progress against the stock market, but at least recently it's given back a good deal of that progress. I just feel like before gold is going to have this really big breakout in a real bull market, we have to see some kind of a breakout in that ratio in favor of gold. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that and the short-term outlook there and perhaps gold being able to strengthen more relative to the stock market?
Absolutely. I mean, frankly, right now, that might be the best and safest way to play gold would be to play gold against the stock market because that ratio has turned. You're talking about major secular multi-year, if not multi-decade type, you know, technical overlays here. So, yes, I think that's a great way to play it. And you talk about, you know, what currency do you want to have on the short side against your long gold? You know, if it's not the Argentinian peso, maybe it's the U.S. S&P 500, because essentially that's a paper currency for all intents and purposes, and one upon which an unprecedented amount of consumer borrowing has been conducted over the last, literally 40 months. So, man, there's so much to think about and talk about. I like that as a way to play it because, of course, there's always risk that gold will go down if the stock market really gets hammered hard. But I would also say this is not a situation like 2008 where you had huge long positions in gold when the stock market cracked. You don't have that here. So I think that that's something that also benefits kind of that thought process of being long the gold market against the stock market. Now, the problem with that trade is if you're wrong, you might get, you know, wasted on both sides of it. So, you know, it's a tricky risk-reward dynamic. But for me, just given everything I see, that trade might make the most sense of any.
Okay, Greg, now is there something that we haven't covered here so far that you think is important with respect to gold?
Absolutely. It's the inflation story. I think it is, you know, people have kind of gotten lulled to sleep. Like inflation isn't a problem. And even if you get some price pressures, inflation won't ever be a problem again. I can tell you when you do some of the work I did last week on capacity utilization, when's the last time including me, okay? And I look at it every time, every month I look at it and I say, you know, okay, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's not. Capacity utilization hasn't been useful in terms of, you know, trying to guess what is resource potential pressure. You know, are you at anywhere near that? I mean, I thought it was interesting within the ISM to note that the metals sector, okay, was showing a 98.5% capacity utilization rate. You know, I mean, some of these numbers are pretty high. We know the industrial sectors in the U.S. has gotten hollowed out, and the numbers are never going to be what they used to be. That doesn't mean they can't tell us something, because capacity utilization is rising, and if it gets near 80, it's going to be high on a relative basis, really high on a relative basis, and it's going to have gotten there despite an expansion in capacity. So that's number one. Number two, we can talk all day about earnings. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I already mentioned the Bank of America's direct deposit dynamic, or at least we did, I guess, off air. When you look at the impact of the tax cuts on wages, which the BLS labor market data does not capture, of course, Bank of America has a direct deposit wage measure that they follow that is at 7.5% year-over-year growth right now. Even average weekly earnings are 3. The ECI is 3 and rising. We have heard in the Beige Book that firms now that can't find skilled workers to fill positions that require skills that a lot of people don't have, they're extending the hours of their existing employees. We saw that in today's payroll number, hours worked up everywhere except basically transportation and warehousing. And when you start to talk about, okay, there's no inflation in average hourly earnings, that is one minor statistic in a universe of statistics that otherwise are suggesting there is inflation, and that would apply to the average weekly earnings as well. Then you have commodities. All right, we know where energy is. Let's keep this in mind. Right now, the June gasoline is around $2.15, right? Last year, June gasoline was below $1.40. Come June, you're going to have a significant increase in energy prices on a year-over-year basis that are going to impact CPI. Last CPI number was down 0.1. Everyone said, see, no inflation problem. Guess what? The decline was singularly gasoline. That's not going to be sustained. So in that vein, you have pressure from energy, let alone what natural gas could do. It's an underpriced commodity relative to a major shift in supply-demand fundamentals in the last 12 months. Put that aside. Let's talk food. Food price inflation was negative 6-8 months ago, is now positive to the tune of 1.5 year-over-year. You have grain prices that were crushed last year by huge crops. But among huge crops, amid huge crops, people tend to forget, particularly with something like oil seeds, demand is equally huge and rising as fast, if not as it will be the case this year, faster than supply. All right, so inventories are being drawn down, even in something like corn, which has had a huge inventory overhang. Well, guess what corn did this week? It broke out. Guess what wheat did this week? It broke out. You had a situation in South America, in both Brazil and Argentina, with droughts that affected corn and affected soybeans. Largest exporter of soybean meal, Argentina, 12 to 14% crop loss. Okay, soybean meal demand globally is at a record high. The point here is, Jordan, you have no margin for error in the grain and oilseeds markets. Any weather event in the U.S. will send these commodities sky high against a base effect where by August it will have moved from 3 years of negative influence on inflation data to positive, even if you stay right here price-wise. Now, corn and wheat broke out. Why? Because you are so far behind in planting of wheat from last year, and the emergence of the corn crop is so far behind last year in the average that you're already into the margin of error. So, of course, they broke out. So I think inflation is real, and I think inflation will intensify going forward. And if the economy is softening, and there are some signs of that, and I think the consumer is very much at risk here, all right, then the Fed might find itself in a box. If all of a sudden a neutral rate is above 3 instead of 2.25, 2.5 maybe, and then what does the Fed do? And that's going to be really interesting. So, man, I'll tell you what, the second half of this year is going to be some really interesting things going on and a lot of cross currents. And, you know, this is why I love to get up in the morning and sit down at my desk and try and, you know, put this 3D puzzle together, because it's fascinating. It's never been harder, and I love doing it. So and it gives us a business, because it ain't easy. I mean, you know, and I know, and you do, and I do work long hours doing this, because you can't just, you know, spend a couple hours looking at some statistics and think you know what's going on, because there's way too much going on right now. So this is why I love doing what we do.
Well, and because of that, Greg, you another question popped in my mind. I guess you could just cover it quickly. I think part of the reason gold hasn't broken out is the real rate story. I mean, you noted that real rates had gone up quite a bit. With the inflationary pressures that you're talking about, I mean, perhaps the next move higher in these pressures, perhaps that is what will benefit gold more so, because you won't have the corresponding ticks higher in real rates that you've had like over the last year.
which is absolutely true. And then you're talking about deeper negative rates because, and I'm not being critical, but I mean, you can't really say real rates have risen. And while, of course, they have, but they're still negative. So they're not rising because they're not positive. And rising would suggest a positive base effect, you know. So I find it interesting to kind of take that perspective on it. And that really gives you a clue of the box the Fed could be in, because you could say inflation, they're already behind the curve if inflation is 2.5. That's why when you got some of the numbers you got this month, you know, we said way back in September 22nd, I wrote a piece, the two-year note was at 140. I said it was going to 235, and my clients kind of went crazy. Like, are you kidding? Like, you know, and that's exactly where I went without a 3 basis point reversal the entire way. All right. Why? Because it was dramatically overpriced. The yield was dramatically too low relative to inflation. And Janet Yellen finally gave us a realistic dot plot projection wherein she basically said, kind of, you know, reading between the lines, we're dropping the word normal. Okay. And we're adopting the word neutral. And I think that was just perfect because I always hated the use of the word normalization. What the Fed wanted to do, because, by the way, they're afraid of having an asymmetrical policy option if the market were to tank and the economy were to tank. Then what are you going to do if you're at, you know, 25 basis points with short-term rates? You're already, you know, winding down your balance sheet. Yellen told us specifically, the next move we want to come from interest rates, meaning easing, by the way, she was very specific about this, not from a reversal of unwinding the balance sheet. Well, that means you've got to create some room to cut rates. So going to neutral was a function of getting a policy symmetry restored. So neutral at that time was somewhere north of 2. So I picked 2.25 because if you're at 2.10, which is the Fed's median estimate for end of this year's Fed funds rate, okay, that implies a 2.25 top end and a 2% bottom end, because, of course, they're using a range still for Fed funds. That may change because of this exact dynamic, which meant that the two-year note, normal, you know, neutral, would be 10 basis points above Fed funds, and Fed funds would be at the rate of inflation. That gave us 235 on the two-year note. That's exactly where it went. The high was 234.7. You know, then it had a correction, and all of a sudden, the data started to suggest maybe inflation was a little higher than 2. Maybe it's 2.5. And where is the two-year note now? 2.5, making new highs. So I think the inflation dynamic is important going forward. I think that this really, you know, it will be really interesting. Does the Fed let real rates get negative again, or do they want to maintain neutrality even at the risk of the U.S. consumer, who is very, very much at risk with all the credit that has been created in the last 4 years? And that credit, not unlike a lot of differences with 2006 and 7, no, in the subprime market, no doubt about it. Okay, a lot of differences. But there are more similarities than I think most people are willing to admit or even realize. The biggest one is, back then, the consumer borrowed against his home, an asset that was appreciating that thought would never go down, right? Unrealized profits in that asset was what the consumer borrowed against, essentially. They're doing the same thing here, only using the stock market and 401k and unrealized paper profits in the equity market, which if they don't exist, the consumer is, pardon my French, screwed. So, you know, the Fed is, you know, never more have they been walking a tightrope above Niagara Falls with no safety net. You tilt that bar a little bit too much this way, you go over. You tilt this bar a little too much the other way, you go over. I don't envy them their job, that's for sure.
Well, Greg, I love the analogies and the pictures you create with all your work. You're the best. Nobody does it better. So tell our listeners where they can go, how they can sign up for your work.
Sure. We try and do this every day. But since I do all of the work myself, because it really is, you know, what I think that we're selling here, you know, we try and publish every day. And we try and cover all the sectors every day, from global macro, of course, to stock indexes, foreign exchange, fixed income around the world, industrial and precious metals, energy and agricultural commodities. We do a daily report. It's a printed PDF report, a lot of charts. And we do a short video that goes with that. So it's kind of like a conference presentation every day, or at least every day that I can muster the energy to do it, because often, you know, it's 50, 60, 70 pages long and not a lot of text, a lot of visuals. And you can get a free subscription, free trial subscription, at least, if you have not had one in the past, by visiting WeldonOnline.com. That's WELDON online, one word, WeldonOnline.com.
All righty, Greg. Thanks so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it, and I sincerely mean it. You're absolutely the best when it comes to gold and macro analysis, and I hope we can do this again in the months ahead.
Anytime, Jordan. It's my pleasure. You do a great job as well, and I admire that.
Thank you for tuning in to the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.